Berkeley Giving Day is coming up on March 6th, and we're counting down the days.
It's a day where the entire Berkeley community comes together to show their support. Whether it's $5 or $500, every gift makes a difference.
Jaquel, did you know that I was here for the very first Berkeley Giving Day?
The first one? Jeez.
Yeah, I've been here a long time. The students actually do get into it a lot now. And it is one of those things where it's just, they're like, oh, it's Giving Day. Cool.
Right. They are definitely looking forward to it. So mark your calendars and get ready to join us. Visit berkeley.edu/givingday to learn more and get involved. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Berkeley Alumni's Pass the Mic, where we pass the mic to you. I'm Jaquel Illy.
And I'm Patrick Farma, but am I even here today?
Yes, you are here. Of course you are. Duh.
How's it going, Jaquel?
This year is flying by.
Yeah, and it's almost going to be 50 degrees out.
I cannot wait. It's been a really cold winter this year.
Yeah, it's been pretty bad. But we are at that point where I can start thinking about wearing a spring jacket.
Yes.
I can't wear the spring jacket, but I can think about it.
Yes. So it's the end of winter, but we're also nearing the end of Black History Month. So, boss, I have a surprise for you because you love to surprise me. Add some little, you know, add some music right there because this is a first. I have a quick rapid questions Black History Month trivia real quick. And I want to see what you know.
Okay.
Are you ready?
No pressure at all.
No pressure. Okay, we can start it off easy. Where did Martin Luther King Jr. deliver his famous I Have a Dream speech?
On the mall in Washington, D.C.
Ding. Add that sound. Add that sound there. Okay. Who was the first African-American woman to hold a pilot license?
Was it Betsy or Betty? I don't remember her last name.
Oh, you were close. Bessie Coleman. We can give you a half a point.
Bessie Coleman. Yes. Okay. Actually, my daughter is, let's back up for a second. Mm-hmm. So, my wife's family's from Barbados. So my daughter is like Irish, Italian, and Caribbean. And so she's wearing her Black History Month t-shirt today. Oh. And Bessie Coleman was on it. But I couldn't remember her last name to save my life.
Oh my gosh. Now you got to tell her. She got to listen to this, mm-hmm. our little producer.
mm-hmm. Okay. From Barbados, just like one of our faculty members, Elin Trotman.
Yes. Which I made a post about. So, you know, a little thing just to go ahead and head over to Berkeley Alumni on Instagram and go look at that post as he is playing on his saxophone.
As they say in Barbados, he's a saxophonist.
Ooh, I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, two more. How many times did Kobe Bryant win the NBA championship?
How many times did I recognize Kobe Bryant winning the NBA championship? Zero times.
No, may he RIP. Rest in peace, Kobe.
If I had to guess off the top of my head, four?
Five, boss. Come on, you like sports? Five. Okay.
But I don't pay attention if my team's not in it.
Okay. And that team is the Celtics, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Go Seas.
And they just won.
We did. We're doing so good.
See, I know that.
We love the Celtics here.
But they've won so many championships, I've lost count, so.
Last question. Mm-hmm. Madam C.J. Walker is known as the first Black self-made millionaire. What product led to her success?
Hair products.
Okay. Ding, ding, ding. You did great. Actually,
my daughter has an American Girl doll, and one of the accessories they have is a Madam C.J. Walker kit.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I love that.
And I could have told you that she was the first Black female millionaire as well.
Boss, you're on it. You did very well for this quick little trivia game. Okay. Well, today we have an amazing, I always say we have an amazing show, but we always do.
It's always amazing.
It's always amazing. When you come here, you know you're going to have a great show. So today's show, we have Kevin Ross, an alum, a songwriter, a singer, and an owner of a record label.
That's right. But I do have some bad news, Jaquel.
What's the bad news?
I'm not in this interview. It's just...
It's sad. I know.
I think Jaquel did this on purpose. Oh, he couldn't do it while you were around, so I just had to do it myself.
Something came up and... You were unable to join us, and we definitely missed you. But I think I was able to hold it down. But I'm also just really grateful that you're here to open it up with me. I mean, hey, if I can't have both, at least I can have one.
It is a great interview. And you guys both brought a lot of energy. And I was like listening to it. And I was like, I don't think I could have brought this much energy. So I am kind of like, okay, it's fine. I do feel like I missed out because there was a great R&B discussion. I wasn't able to flaunt all of my knowledge of Babyface and Brian McKnight. Oof.
Yeah, that could have been a good addition.
Even Music Soul Child.
Yes.
It's okay. It's for another day. There's other R&B singers out there.
Yeah, and we will be interviewing them, so stay tuned. I know you have a lot going on right now. You're on tour. Yes. How is that going for you?
It's going amazing. So we did the first two dates, which was in St. Louis and Chicago. We sold both of those out. And so we're coming to Boston this Sunday, actually. So that's going to be super duper fun. A great, you know, rekindling of my old days in Boston. Because to be honest, since Boston, since going to Berkeley, I haven't been up to Boston too much. So, you know what I mean? This would be like reestablishing myself within the city. And so that'd be super cool.
It's funny you say that because I was going to ask you, like, when's the last time you've actually been on campus? We got to figure out a way to get you back.
Yes, absolutely.
More frequently.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm always in touch with Karen Bell over there at Berkeley.
Yes, I love Miss Karen Bell.
Yeah, super, super duper amazing. And so, you know, she's been saying the same thing, just figuring out how and when. But I'm looking forward to it because of the experience that I've acquired throughout the industry. I'm able to kind of go through different departments and different majors and speak on my experiences and at least try to, you know, give the people that are at Berkeley an edge up.
And I'm sure whatever you have to share, whether it's just your talent, your knowledge, students, alums, and that's why I have you here, because I know you're going to drop some gems on us today. So we are thankful to, you know, just have you here, and we're welcoming you back with open arms. Hey. So where are you from?
I'm from Washington, D.C.
Washington. Okay. So not too far from Boston. How did you hear about Berkeley? Like, can you tell us a little bit about your journey to Berkeley?
Yeah, honestly, it was a godsend because I didn't even know Berkeley existed until my junior year of high school. And so with that being said, there was somebody that actually came to our school. I was really at a crossroad because in high school, our whole curriculum as it pertains to the arts was based on classical music. And so that was really the only path that was offered to me was, hey, you know, you're here at the school, you're going to go to college, and then you're going to major in classical voice, because that's all I knew. But what I did understand about myself was my intrigue was not within singing the music, but more so to say, these composers have been gone for hundreds of years and their music still lives. I want to be back. Right. I want to have some type of catalog that exists longer than me. And so I was like, I need something that's contemporary, something that's more modern. And I don't know if there's a school that's out there that fits that mold. And so luckily there was a scout from Berkeley that came and really broke it down to us. And I was like, yo, this is the school for me. Like, I don't know where it's at. I don't care. Like, I'm going to apply. So they came to Baltimore. That was the closest stop. And I auditioned. And one of my judges was Armstead Christian. God bless his soul. And he was the one that really put the battery in my back. And so when I got to Berkeley, he became my vocal teacher. So he was my hardest critic, but he was also my biggest fan. And so I love him to death in the sense of, you know, what he was able to instill inside of me. And so I'm super grateful that Berkeley even came to my school.
What piece did you use? What did you sing to audition?
Oh my gosh, I think I did a piece called God Bless the Child. And so I don't know if I sang and played, but I remember it was like super brief. And so I was like, all right, well, I hope that I made an impression.
Wow, that's so cool. Were you nervous? Or you was like,
absolutely.
I
was uber nervous. I was uber nervous because, you know, like, I didn't know too much about Berkeley, but I knew that I was like, this is the only school that I know that's like this. I have to make it. I have to make it inside of here.
There's no other choice. So there was no plan B.
No.
Berkeley or nothing.
No. Not at all.
How did you feel about Boston, like, once you first got on campus? How was that?
That is tricky because I come from Washington, D.C., you know what I mean? And being very candid, during that time, it was still Chocolate City. And so it was a big culture shock for me, you know what I mean? To be in such a diverse city where I truly felt for the first time like the real percentage that I am in America, in a sense
like a minority,
like a true minority. And so that was kind of off-putting for me at first. But luckily, Berkeley is its own community, you know what I mean? Like, you know, so once I was within that space, within that bubble, it felt like I was right at home. So no matter what you looked like, we had something in common always, whether it was our favorite artist, whether it was our favorite time to practice, whatever, like we can always find common ground between each other with creatives. And so that made my Boston experience somewhat pleasurable.
Yeah, that's powerful. And I think, you know, you made a really great point. We do have a good community, not only like as students, but then as well as alums. Yeah. Like the community is super strong. You guys can relate because like you said, everyone is looking at the same thing. Everyone is talented. Everyone wants to be great. So it's really cool to have one another to kind of lean on in hard times, right? So how did your music, like your love for music, develop? Like what got you interested in music?
My dad played tons of music all the time while, you know, I was younger. And so, you know, it grew from just being a fan of listening to then, you know, trying my hand at it as it pertains to singing, trying to match vocals on the radio, seeing if I had, you know, if I was up to snuff, doing talent shows, singing in church.
Yeah.
So by the time that I was 16, it really hit me to say, okay, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Like the feeling that I was able to have on stage and obviously, you know, long down the road, the feeling that I could give people. And so I was like, wow, this is something that I don't want to let go of. I don't know how I'm going to insert myself into this music thing, but I want a piece of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what about R&B music attracted you?
I don't know. R&B music is a culmination of multiple genres. So, you know, when I think of R&B, I think of the lushness of jazz chords. I think of the lyricism of country folk telling, you know, story, you know, music. I think obviously the blues, right? I mean, rhythm and blues. But it was a hybrid. It was a hybrid of a lot of the early genres of what we know of. Right. And so to me, I identified with that genre, you know what I mean? Like, very, very specifically. And so I will say this, though. During the time that I was at Berkeley, R&B was not a cool thing to do.
What was the most popular genres during your time?
It was either you were a jazz head or you were in gospel. That was it. Those are the only two worlds that could really exist and that were popularized within the school. And so for me, I was really the oddball out where it's like, you like R&B? You sing R&B music? Wow. You're going to commit to R&B? Luckily, because I was a true student, I loved jazz. I loved the standards. I loved reading those cheat sheets and all that stuff. And so I really leaned on the fact that I'm like, the more that I can acquire from other genres, the stronger that I can make my case within R&B to say that R&B is not just about crooning. It's not just about sexualization. It's not about, you know, the typical things that you hear. It's like you can be musical and you can be a musician within that space. And so, there's that.
Yeah. So you can kind of just like apply it to yourself and make it your own. And another thing about R&B music, you was talking about how you like the emotions you bring out of people when you were singing.
Absolutely.
I think R&B music is a great, you know, genre for that.
Absolutely.
It definitely brings out a lot of emotions, whether you're in love, whether you're sad, you know, whether you're happy. So many different emotions. And what better way than R&B? So I wanted to know, like, what is your take on this? So I don't know if you have heard people say that R&B music is dead. What do you think about that?
I think it is a great conversation piece. to talk about R&B. But R&B will never die. You know what I mean? Just because of how it was created, the hybrid of it and the cross-pollinization of it, that it will always exist. It will just take different shapes. Right now, I like to say that R&B is in a reconstruction phase. You know, I think that what ended up happening was R&B was milked for all it was worth during a certain time. So let's just say early 2010s, that was when a lot of money was being made within a space where it's like, okay, now we're pop, we're this, we're that, let's just milk it. And so the concepts, everything started to be redundant. So we had to take a back seat and we needed to, you know, reposition ourselves in a way to, you know, get fresh ideas, have fresh faces to represent where we are as it stands right now. And so, R&B would never die. It just takes on a new form. That's it.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, with everything, things change. And sometimes change is hard to see when you're in it.
Yes.
But then it's also hard to accept as well, right?
Yes.
And so I think earlier you was making a good point of how you was breaking down R&B and how different genres kind of fit into R&B. Mm-hmm. And when you had mentioned the storytelling part with country, it made me think of Beyonce and how she just did, like, she calls it her own way of doing country. But, you know, so I think that that is super interesting to, like, kind of put together. And I feel like R&B music, I agree with you, it's not dead. I feel like it's up and coming now, right? I feel like there's a lot of great R&B singers, including yourself, you know? And so I just feel like there's more to come.
Absolutely. No, it's a lot more to come. And I think that within this iteration of R&B, the independence of R&B and within the artists will be the most important, because all of my heroes have been signed to major labels. And so when I'm looking or gleaning for help in a way, I have no one to call, you know? And so with that being said, there was no blueprint that was laid for independent R&B music. And so we're literally laying the blueprint now. You know, hence hip hop had its own blueprint 20 or 30 years ago. They have all of these, you know, Brian Williams and Percy Miller and, you know what I mean? Like, AKA Master P and Birdman and, you know, Rap-A-Lot. And it was so much during that time where it was able to advance the hip hop genre faster, bigger, and it was able to scale, I mean, in a way wider than us as far as within R&B.
Right.
So within this iteration, understanding your business is going to be the most important part of the evolution of R&B, for sure.
Ooh, that was some deep stuff right there. That I think that was really interesting to kind of put it in that type of perspective, because I never really thought about it that way. So yeah, I can understand why you're saying that, like, rap kind of moved quickly because of the independence of the artists, and then big R&B artists kind of were all signed to a label.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you explain that a little bit more? Because I know you have your own label.
Yes.
So it's like you're practicing what you're preaching.
Yes.
So how are you instilling this type of mindset into your own artist that you have on your own label, or into yourself as well?
I'm the crash dummy on my company called Art Society Music Group. To be honest, how I'm implementing it is by being fearless. And so, you know, I'll use an example. So I do well at radio. I do well at R&B radio. And so I had a song that was reaching top 10 and I was ready to put out another record, and which I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And so one of my radio guy's name is Mike Johnson. He says, it looks like, you know, both of these songs are trending up, and you'll have two records in the top 20 at the same time. And so I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. He's like, it's not a lot of artists that do that. So then I start asking around and I'm like, well, how many independent artists have done that within this R&B space? And I kept asking, and it was like, no, I don't know. There's no one. And I dug around more and I was like, no one has done this. And so I made history with being the first and the only independent R&B artist with two records within the top 20 at Billboard R&B Radio. And so,
humble brag. You don't have to go through that too quick. That's amazing.
Yes, thank you.
It's amazing. Congrats.
You know, but it also let me know that there's more. Mm-hmm. There's more to accomplish. You know what I mean? If I'm the first person within, this just happened last year, you know, in 2023 of me being the first, then how many more achievements, so more records that are meant to be broken, not just by me, but right. by those who are willing to invest in themselves. And that is what it boils down to. What is your belief system made and built off of, right? And so for me, I'm always approaching records. I'm always approaching my marketing strategies. I'm always approaching my team in a sense to say, hey, this is bigger than me. We are building the platform and the blueprint for the future of R&B. You know, I have a new son. He's 16 months old. Yes.
Oh,
thank you.
So cute. Yes, congrats.
Thank you. And I'm like,
mad congrats.
Thank you. But you know, if he's ever, you know, decides that he wants to do music, God forbid. But if he does, right?
God forbid. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, we can get to that later. But you know, if he does, I want to say that I did everything that I possibly could as his father in order to make his journey, his path, his trek easier, to say that anything that the major label can do, we can do too. And anything is possible. It's just about where we allocate our money at the end of the day. Mm. It's not about having millions and millions of dollars in order to market it. It's to say that the money that you do have, where do you double down on? Where's your sectors? Where's your verticals? Where are you most dominant at? Where are you going to reinvest? And so with an independent space, everybody wants to see their rewards fast. And it's not that. The money that we do make, we have to put it back into our business in order to scale. Eventually, you will get to a point where you reap your benefits. But for the first couple of years, it is not pretty at all.
It's a lot of hard work and dedication. So, yeah, I think that was some really good gems. You know, sometimes, you know, people are looking to be signed, but there's also a lot of great possibilities out of just being independent. Yeah. So I think that's really cool to know. But just backing up a little bit, after your time at Berkeley, you continued your pursuit in music and got signed to Motown Records. Now, for those who do not know, Motown Records is huge. Diana Ross, the Supremes, Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, and many more, of course. So, like, how did this deal come about?
Wow. It's making me kind of like back rattle to that space. Motown was going through a different phase, and so it was kind of like a new regime, and so they were looking for fresh faces. And so I did kind of like this BET Music Matters showcase in LA, and it just so happens that the president of Motown was there, and David Foster's sister, James Foster, was there as well. And so, you know, David Foster owns a company by the name of Verve Records as well. And so they both wanted a piece of what I was doing. And so Motown and Verve Records came together and offered a situation to me. And so, you know, that's how that came about. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, were you excited? Like, what was the emotions you was experiencing during that, like, offer?
I'll say this. I graduated 2009, 2010. And so I didn't get signed until maybe 2013. And so those 3 years, I was down in Atlanta. I wrote, and it felt like a long time. Like, in hindsight, you know, 3 years doesn't seem too long, but living every day of those 3 years, you know,
waiting for that time to come.
And graduating from Berkeley, there's a high expectation, not only of yourself, but of others that have seen you make progress with that, you know, within school. You know, you've seen musicians go off on tour immediately after, you know what I mean, after graduating, or sometimes they don't even graduate. They leave and get on the road and they gone, right? And so to me, I built this expectation on myself. I'm like, yo, I gotta get signed. I done said all this stuff. I done did all this stuff. Now I gotta really prove it in the real world. Right. And so, 3 years later, after graduating, it happened. And so, you know, we were off to the races. And so,
Yeah, I would say, you know, yes, I agree. 3 years, you know, probably in it, while you're in the thick of it, you're like, oh my goodness, like praying, like, please let there be a way. But, you know, I think that just attests to, like, how you persevere through hard times and, like, you keep working hard to get to your goals, right? And it also fits within being independent, right? You got to work hard. You I feel like back in those days, you was probably laying the foundations of what you are today, right? Of hardworking and just keep going. And, you know how great you are, but you just, you know, staying down to the come up. Mm-hmm. You all are already up. But I just feel like at that time, you know, you just have to go through that time.
Absolutely. And plus, you know, I will say this. Because mm-hmm. I was known as more so of a singer in at Berklee. And okay. So when I went to Atlanta after I graduated, I became a writer, like a full-fledged songwriter.
Can you explain that pivot a little bit? Like what was the pivot like, or what made you do that?
Once again, my favorite teacher in the whole wide world, Armstead Christian, God bless his soul. He said, always do things that you suck at. Always do things that are challenging for you. Never lean on the things that you're already great at. And so he told me that in school. He was like, what are you majoring in? And I was like, I'm thinking about vocal performance. He was like, don't do that. Don't do that. He was like, if you do that, then I can't be your teacher. And I was like, why you say that? He's like, because you're leaning on things that you're already good at. Why would you major in something that you already know how to do? That's just an easy cop out for you to glide through these 4 years. Challenge yourself. What are the things that you don't know how to do, Kevin? And I was like, well, I don't necessarily know how to like write music. He was like, well, good. He was like, so arranging? And I was like, arranging seems a little stiff. And he was like, CWP. And I was like, yeah, contemporary writing production. I was like, that sounds more of my speed, you know, it's right. Songwriting, stuff like that. And so, you know, that's where I began my journey. And so when I was graduating, I remembered his words and I was like, if I'm going to go out into the world, I'm going to go to Atlanta, I'm going to start my career in the industry, I'm going to start brand new. I'm not going to start as an artist. I'm going to get the best vantage point that I can. And that's behind the scenes as a writer. So nobody knows that, you know, it wasn't even a true intention of becoming an artist. It was truly to say, how good can I get as a writer? Mm. And can my pen skills or my penmanship match my vocal ability? And I spent every day, 6 days a week, 24/7 in the studio. And from that, I think I landed my first placement within a year. And that was pretty cool. But all that to say is that the pivot was necessary. It was necessary in order for me to broaden who I was as a creative. Absolutely. And so it really came in handy. Let's just say that, like, even down the road, it came in handy when, you know, if things wasn't popping as an artist or as a singer, I could always go into a different sector.
I think that that's a really good thing for people to know, right? Like, do something you're not good at. Yes, you may be a pro already with your vocals, but you never know where these extra like abilities may help you out in. And you were just mentioning like your first placement, and I know that you have wrote for many legends. And so, like, that includes Toni Braxton and Nicki Minaj. I want to know, like, how were these experiences? You can even explain, like, how was that first placement? How did that feel? Like, oh my goodness, like, I'm sure that was huge.
That was crazy because I didn't expect it. So my first placement was with Jamie Foxx. And so that was really fun because I got the call one day. Like, it was a Saturday morning. I was chilling in my apartment and I get a call and they're like, yo, like, you need to get to L.A. And I was like, okay. And they was like, no, today. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I didn't have much of nothing. So I was like, all right, cool. Like, yeah, Jamie wants to cut the records that you wrote. And I was like, okay, I'm pack my little bags.
No questions asked. I'm there.
Yeah. Pack my little bags. they had my ticket arranged and I was off to LA, went to Jamie's house out in Calabasas. And man, he had his guest house that he had turned into a studio. And so we're, you know, me and a producer, we're getting ready. And I'm like, yo, I'm in Jamie Foxx's house. This is kind of crazy.
Insane, right?
I'd say this, that like we're getting ready and we're listening to the song. And then here comes Jamie. Jamie comes in like a 100 trillion watt light bulb just on fire, right? So I'm like, yo, he's dancing to my song. He knows the words. Like, I'm like, my mind is blown.
Wow.
So we get in, we're working. I'm telling Jamie Foxx what to sing, how to sing, you know, certain parts. And so I'm like, okay, well, it's time to do the backgrounds. He's like, no. We keeping all your backgrounds. I was like, all right, cool. That's what's up. And so one thing that I did notice about Jamie was his dedication and his focus. That was the first time that I seen somebody. He was looking at the TV, in which we all were. And it was somebody, like some political person that was on there that was talking. And so, you know, everybody's kind of making jokes. And then we turn to Jamie, and Jamie's like, his face is like stone, like
straight.
You ain't getting nothing from him. But I had never seen that level of focus. And what was happening during the time was he was absorbing information. And so as soon as he snapped out of it, then he was able to mimic what he had just saw. And I was like, this is crazy. Nothing else mattered in the moment. It was as if we didn't exist in the space. It was just him and that person was locked in, and he was taking every nuance of what was going on, facial expressions, voice, you know what I mean? Emulations and all that stuff. And I was like, this is different. Like, this level of focus, this level of intensity, I've never seen anybody in that state. But I was like, that's why he's a great in his field. And so I was very impressed, and it was a great experience
as an actor too. You know, he's really good as an impersonator, so I can only imagine, you know. So wow, so that experience is like amazing. I'm sure you have a bucket load of stories, but that is really cool. So from him, you was able to understand like how to, do you feel like you concentrate a little bit more or focus more on different things? Like, were you able to take that from him?
Absolutely. It's not about how much time that you have, but it's what you do with the time that you got. And so to me, it's like, if I got an hour, if I got 2 hours, I got to make the most of it. And I got to turn off my phone. I got to make sure that there's no distractions. I got to go inside of wherever I'm doing with the mission at hand. I cannot go anywhere or to a studio and to, you know, a performance just willy nilly. I have to understand my mission and my purpose and what I'm trying to accomplish here. And so it's like, no matter how much time you give me, I'm going to do my very best in order to get it done.
Right. That's really cool. Because I did see in a previous interview, you were explaining like the importance of taking gems away from A-list celebrities or just celebrities that you talk to or work with. In the music industry, you know, it's flooded with a lot of talented people in all different genres. And so in another previous article, you stated like you feel like people give up a little bit too easily. And so I wanted to know, like, what motivates you to keep on going? Like, how do you deal with the ups and downs of the industry? And I know previously you just stated, like, God forbid my son gets into this. So tell me your thoughts on that.
I think that's one of my gifts, honestly. I thought that it was something that could be curated, but my endurance, my willingness to stand up against adversity is a true gift. And so it's something that I don't take for granted. But with that being said, it is something that you can work on as an artist, as a creative, as just a human being. And so for me, with the ebbs and flows of the industry, I understand that that's just like life, right? And the more sectors that you have, the more things that you have under your belt as it pertains to skill sets, talents, and abilities, there will never be a drought. Right. So just because you're not wanted in one sector for one season doesn't mean that it applies to all of the fields that you have skills in. And so that always gives me confidence where it's like, all right, cool. Like, you know, my writing's kind of cold right now. So let me hone in on hitting the road, or let me hone in on my artistry, or let me, you know, focus on my production, whatever the case may be. But it's so many different verticals that I can jump in and out of to make sure that I sustain myself and to strengthen myself as well. So that's the beauty of it, is like being able to stand strong and stand still to say, hey, like, everything's going to be good. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and hey, your ride is going to get hot again, or whatever's going, you know, it's going to work. But for right now, you're wanted and you're needed in this area. So you may not be the focal point or in the front within that particular area. But are you willing to put your ego to the side and use that humility? In a certain season of my life where I was going through a transition between leaving my major label and starting my company, I couldn't put out music. So the artistry was like on ice because of legal stuff. However, I realized that I could be of service to other people. So there's a writer by the name of Esther Dean that I created a relationship with. And she's amazing.
She's really good. Yes.
And so she was working on a show that was called Songland on NBC. She was one of the judges. Okay. And so she was just like, hey, like, do you want to like come in and like help me? And I was like, well, you know, what do you need for me to do? So essentially, I became kind of like a music coordinator for her. And so essentially my job was to, you know, make sure that all of the songs from the people that was on her team were gathered, they were mixed, they were mastered, all of the production stems were together. If I needed to tweak something and add something, that was a part of my job. And so, wow. You know, of course, talking to peers, they're like, yo, like, you an artist yourself, this and that, like, at this season, my services and what I've been blessed to acquire along within my journey is helping me to do this job and to strengthen my relationship with one of the most amazing writers, you know what I mean, alive generation. To glean off of her and to make sure that I'm still able to keep the lights on while still doing music was a blessing within itself. No, I was not in front. No, I did not have the spotlight. No, there were no plaques to put on the wall from after Songland. But what it gave me was the experience to insert myself in certain conversation rooms that I may not have been able to do in any other, you know, vertical that I have.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks to like the importance of being versatile in everything, right? In any genre or whatever, just be able to, again, pivot, whether you're songwriting, whether you're having another opportunity, because you never know where these other opportunities may lead to.
That's right.
Right? And so I think that that is really dope that you was able to get the experience in a different way. It also just highlights the importance of trusting yourself. You got to trust yourself, you know, like even though you may not be where you want to be in that timing, you know, like, you know that you're going to get to where you want to go.
Absolutely.
Because of your hard work, you know, the way you persevere through these times of stillness. You know, sometimes times of stillness is a blessing, right? We got to just stay still to be able to listen to where to go. I think that your journey kind of attests to this. I know we are coming up on time, but I have a couple more questions. You were speaking about like your songwriting journey, like the process of your songwriting. And I wanted to know, like, what inspires you when it comes to your songwriting?
That is a great question. To be honest, what inspires me is life, obviously, other people's experiences. And really, it's about synthesizing the moral of the story, right? Like, so when I have conversations with people, they'll say, da 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 blah, 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 blah. And then in my mind, I'm like, I'm collecting to say, and the moral of the story is concept, right? And then I'll put the concept in my phone and I'm like, okay, I know how to expound on this because I just had a huge conversation with somebody about it. So life is centered around concepts, in themes, in seasons, right? So it's always about bigger pictures and then being able to rip out the details of these bigger picture moments. And so that's what inspires me. Melodies. I think melody is king. So to me, like, if I hear a good melody, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love it. Like, how can I flip it? How can I? This is where counterpoint comes into, you know, into the situation. Using the creative side of in the educational side that I've acquired from Berklee, being able to say, all right, I love this melody, but I'm not here to take it or to, you know, have copyright infringement, you know, come after me. So I need to be able to create a new motif that feels familiar, but that still gives me those goosebumps. So that feeling. Mm. And so to me, I love that challenge. There's nothing better than an original melody that God gives you. You know what I mean? Mm. But in certain ways, you know, certain things where it's like, oh, I got to figure out how to use you know, certain cadences that I love and make it fresh.
Hearing you say that made me think a lot of new music is a bunch of, like, it contains old beats, right? It's a lot of, like, renewed beats, I guess. I don't know how to, the correct way to put it. How do you feel about that? Is that, like, lazy? Is it just, because it's like, even my dad, like, he'll be bump into a song. I'm like, you don't even like the song. You like the beat because you know what I'm saying? So I'd be like, wait a minute. You know what they're saying? You know?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel two different ways. The creative side of me, yes, it is lazy. And it's, you know, it's redundant, right? And that could get the ecosystem of hip hop or whatever genre it is in trouble because of the fact that it's not turning out anything new and fresh, right? It puts the state of whatever the genre is into a kind of like a black hole.
Michael?
In a sense.
Oh, yes.
but then there's the other side of me, and that is the artist advocate side to say, wow, they're changing their life with this recreation or flip. I've been a part of songs where, you know, I've used flips. It may not have been on the beat side, but it's been on the lyrical side and using certain things. And so, like, you know, you may only get 5 to 10% of a song, you know, maybe, you know, for my case, it was 7.5% of a song. But when 7.5 creates, you know, high six figures for you, you know what I mean? As a result,
that's a blessing.
It changes things in the sense of saying, yeah, I could have used something original and I could have got more money from it. But that 7.5% changed my address or changed the way that I was living, right? So the artist advocate side says, hey, go and get your money. You know what I'm saying? But also the creative side is like, we could do better. And so that's
kind of like a tug and pull.
It's definitely a tug and pull, but I think we need both. We need a balance of both. We need for people to check to say, hey, love that new song, but let's do something fresh next time. You know what I'm saying? Don't make that your whole business model, because you won't last long. You know what I mean?
Or like your catalog, like switch it up, spice it up a little bit. Yeah. Okay. Two more questions. What have you learned from Berklee that you currently practice in your career today?
Wow. Great question. Thank you. Yes. Build your own world. Build your own world. So like I said, at Berklee, R&B was not celebrated. It was not something that people came to see at calf shows or anything like that.
Yeah.
However, I had to stay true to who I was and what I wanted to do in my agenda. And so I decided to build my own world. And so instead of me trying to assimilate or fit into what was already popular, creating my own world, people had to respect that. And so when they wanted to get a dose of whatever I was offering, they had to come and see me. Right. And to me, that is what kind of gave me the confidence to step out outside of Berklee to say, I'm going to continue to build this world. Right. And of course, within this world, you're going to have your ebbs, your flows, your ups and downs, all this stuff. And it's all about perspective. But within that world, you have to make sure that that world is sustainable, right? So I always tell artists and creatives alike that everybody wants to go to the moon. Everybody wants to go, like, I want to make it. I want to, the stars, this, and that.
Yeah.
And it's like, the first step as a creative is to make sure that you could do what you love and keep the lights on while doing it. I know so many creatives that are out there that literally have to, you know, have a 9-to-5 in order to support their dreams versus their dreams supporting them. And so the goal is to build a model where it's like, no, what you do, your ability and your raw talent to create the life that you desire. That is what we call a career. You know what I mean? Outside of that, the stardom, you mainstream, this and that.
Yeah.
That's just the perks of it. But I've literally seen IRS take people's Grammys and plaques. That happens. I don't know if people truly understand that. Is that just because you get to a certain level does not mean that you are impervious or invincible to all of the toils that can happen. I'm talking about Grammy Award winning popular artists, legends alike that cannot sustain that level of stardom or what we desired as it pertains to in college or as kids. The reality is you build a career first to know that whether hot or cold, whether rain or shine, that I know how to survive off of what I'm able to do.
Right.
I didn't realize how rare that was. I didn't realize how difficult that was for people. But that's because the world that I built was slow but steady. And so I seen people fall off. I seen people take off. I seen all of this stuff as I was building my world. I never stopped building. It was the same thing at Berkeley. People would leave. They would go off and do this. And I was like, my world can't stop because people leaving or people going or people asking. So what are you doing? What is this and that? Well, I'm doing this. Such and such doing this. How come you not doing this? It's like
all the of comparisons.
These things are happening. People in your ear. It's like, no, keep building. Keep building because that's what's going to matter at the end of the day. This is a marathon. So it ain't about who's the fastest in the first quarter. It's like, nah, like for the long run, who's going to stand the test of time? Who's going to be able to provide for their family for the long run?
Doing what you want to do.
Doing what you want to do and what you love to do. That's hard. That's tough. And I ain't going to lie. My life changed and I guess established my career in 2014. Remember, I graduated in 2010. So it took some time in order for me to doing these odd jobs and 9-to-5s in order to survive. I'm 10 years into having a career in a sense of saying, hey, nothing but music has put food on the table and provided opportunities for me. And so that's all I can say in a sense of.
Yeah.
Thank you, Berkeley, for giving me the confidence of building a world for myself.
Wow, that's super inspiring. You know, somebody out there is probably thinking like, wow, like I may not fit into any of these cohorts or these certain things on campus, but just know that just trusting yourself and keep going because your journey is going to be special.
Absolutely.
Last thing. So you have accomplished a lot of things. Congratulations on a lot of things you have going on. How does it feel to be where you are? You just mentioned how you are 10 years in the game, right? Like working hard, putting your all into everything, making sure that you experience different realms in the music industry. Like, how does it feel to be where you are right now? You're on tour, you're continuing your career. Like, how are you feeling?
I feel blessed. I feel like everything that I thought my life and my career would have been has superseded itself. If you were to have told me at 20 years old that what I'd be doing right now, like I'd be like, that sounds like a lot, and I don't have the bandwidth to do that. You know what I mean?
No way, not me. So,
yeah, because the truth was, my goal was to just be respected as a vocalist, to hear myself on the radio or hear songs that I've done on the radio, and that was it. That was it. So, you know, 10 years ago, I accomplished my goal. You know what I mean? But God had other plans. And he understood that this is a journey. And so, you know, once you climb one mountain, you realize that there's other mountains that are higher than that. We were like, wait.
Right.
So
like, oh, stop. Yeah.
Exactly. So to me, I feel blessed, man, because I know what it could be. I've seen it, you know what I mean, in other people's lives. And to me, I'm like, nah, I wouldn't trade my life for anybody else's. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I got my peace, I got my family, I got my career, and my career is still in the uptick. And so to me, that's what keeps me even more excited, where I'm not looking at my career in a sense of I'm watching the sunset. It's like the sun is still rising on.
There's still more to go.
Exactly. Still a whole lot more to go.
A whole lot. Yeah.
Apparently from what God has told me, it's a lot more to go.
There's more records to break, okay?
Man,
you got to keep going.
God told me, I said, man, it made me tired just thinking about it. I said, oh man, but
yes.
I'd much rather be busy with doing what I love to do and yes. I mean, versus just kind of sitting back and hoping for something to happen. It's like, I gotta be grateful even in the thick of busyness, even when you're tired. It's like, I'm tired because I'm doing something, and I'm doing something that I want to do. So it puts the battery in my back.
Just keeps you going. Do you have any last things you would like to say that you want to add?
To everyone that's listening, I'll say this for Berkeley students first. When you're at Berkeley, understand that it is not the end of the world. Understand that it is the beginning of the world that you are creating. The goal at Berkeley is to network. That means to make friends, to have colleagues, because you never know who's going to be who at the end of the day. Make sure that your experience is fun. Make sure that you talk to people. Do not be in practice rooms 24/7. We appreciate your greatness and your creativity. However, we do want to make sure that you are experiencing a human experience at Berkeley. That means go outside of your comfort. Go to different places that you may not have gone. Make sure that you talk to people that you may not normally talk to. Please enjoy yourself, because you will look back at your experience and how you use your experience or spend your experience. You'll live with that for the rest of your life. So, if you're spending money at Berkeley, make yes. the most of it. And even for the full scholarship people, make the most of your experience. Do not lean on the fact that you have a full scholarship. Do not boast about that, because your world, just as much as it's starting right now, it can end right where it is. So Ooh. Please use that humility. But most importantly, as you guys are coming into yourselves as young men and women, please enjoy the experience. Please laugh as much as you can. Love as hard as you can. Learn as much as you can. All right? Because when you get onto this real world, it's for real.
It is not a joke out here, okay? Life is life. Life be life,
yes,
as I like to say.
And for my alumni, for my Berkeley alumni, we all know Ooh. What it's like out here in the real world. Please stay diligent. Please stay encouraged, no matter where you are, whether you're on the highest mountaintop or whether you're in the lowest valley. Please stay encouraged. Please stay motivated and understand that there's a community that is here for us, that we share in the same experience. And just know, even if I've never met you, I never seen you, I love you because of the fact that we are one and the same. So God bless y'all.
And we're back. And that was the episode with Kevin Ross. Give me your thoughts, boss.
It's interesting to me because he hit the scene after Berkeley at a really transitional time. Mm. It was a time where a lot of the digital tools and social media and online media was really kind of like still, maybe not in its infancy, but at its like toddler stage. And I think a sign of his success is that he's still here and that he's figured out how to do these things. I think the most important thing about when you come to learn any kind of art is that you're learning how to learn,
right?
Because what you're learning in the moment isn't going to last you 25 years, you know?
Right.
So learning how to learn about the trends of the industry, about how to roll with it, and about how to have different tools in your tool belt to be able to address them. You know, you can't just be one thing anymore.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good point. Just like the ability to adapt. I really appreciate it. Like, he was just very honest about a lot of the industry insights, him not really wanting his son to be in the industry in the future. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. Him talking to me about his perspective on R&B when I asked him, is it dead or not? I just feel like this was like a super interesting and cool interview. And I'm just very thankful for all of the gems that he was able to drop. Okay, so who is closing us out today?
Today, we have Di Edwardsberry, who goes by the stage name Neon Black. I mentioned this in a previous episode, but our variation series is over 5 years old now. And so this semester, we're doing a signature series, and Di's video is the first one to come out. So check that out at youtube.com/Berkeley alumni. Dai is in Atlanta now and just got an MBA, right?
Yes, from Emory. I remember when I went down there, Donna and I was able to meet up with Dai, have some lunch, and it was just a really good time. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. Thanks for tuning in and see you at the next episode.
This whole time.